Good afternoon, and welcome to the Unisys Go-to-Market Overview webinar. I would now like to turn the conference over to Frank Adkins, Research Analyst at SunTrust. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, Cole. Hello and good afternoon. First off, thank you to Courtney Holben and the IR team at Unisys for hosting this conversation. This is Frank Adkins. I'm the Research Analyst covering the space here at SunTrust. I'll be helping to moderate the discussion. I'm excited to get another layer of transparency here in this opportunity, get some time to talk to a key leader at Unisys. Today, we have Jeff Renzi, who's the Senior Vice President and President of Global Sales. I always love the chance to talk to heads of sales organizations, as they are not only great communicators who tell it like it is, but are really on top of the pulse of client demand, understand the competitive landscape and key issues. So I think this is going to be a great conversation. So after my quick opening remarks here, Jeff will then highlight some key points of the global marketing and go-to-market efforts at Unisys. I'll start off with a few questions, and then we'll leave the rest of the time open for Q&A. And I really encourage people to please feel free to ask questions through the dial-in or webcast. So with that, I'll stop and hand it over to Courtney and Jeff.
Great. Thank you, Frank. Good afternoon. And as Frank said, my name is Jeff Renzi. I'm Senior Vice President and President of Global Sales here at Unisys. Today, we have 1 hour to discuss Unisys' go-to-market momentum and recent sales success. The first 30 minutes will be devoted to prepared remarks and a short slide presentation. The second 30 minutes will be used to answer any questions the audience may have. Please hold questions until the end. First, our agenda. Today, we will review our go-to-market momentum, what specifically is driving this success, review 3 key case studies of actual deals impacted by these key drivers, and finally, review critical factors that we believe will continue to position us for future continued success. Next slide. Now let's review some important metrics that demonstrate recent performance. Those metrics are total contract value, annual contract value, and pipeline. As you can see, our total contract value grew 8% year over year in 2017, resulting in a total of $3.2 billion in sales. Of the $3.2 billion, $1.2 billion of those sales was in a category we call new business. New business is defined as new logo sales, or new sales to new clients, and new service lines to existing clients. New business is very important to our growth engine, and it grew 89% year over year and represented 38% of our total sales in 2017. 2017 annual contract value was also impressive. ACV is defined as the first 12 months of actual projected revenue. Total company ACV grew 22% year over year. New business ACV was $442 million, representing 93% year-over-year growth. ACV is a very important metric for us because it tells us how much of our TCV we can expect to convert into recognized revenue within the first 12 months of the contract. So we monitor it closely. Pipeline was particularly strong, and we finished the year at a total of $13.6 billion. With $11.2 billion, 82%, in the new business category. Again, I highlight that because it shows that our sales focus on new business is paying off. Our security pipeline was up an impressive 20% year over year, and our industry applications, products, and services also grew, and the total pipeline at greater than $745 million. Finally, in 2017, the percentage of our total revenue attributed to our focused industries was 44%. Next slide. Backlog represents an important metric that we also follow in the company. And backlog is defined as the balance of our contracted services revenue that have not yet that's not yet recognized or hasn't converted to revenue. This slide shows how our recent sales momentum is contributing to backlog growth. From 2014 through first quarter of 2017, we were consuming backlog, not growing it. And that's not good. But since then, we've arrested that decline and now have two quarters of sequential growth. And comparing our backlog at the end of first quarter 18 to first quarter 17, we show year-over-year growth of 26%, which is quite impressive. Now let's segue to really the main purpose of today's discussion, and that is the key drivers of recent go-to-market momentum. There are really two primary pillars of success that I'll spend time describing to you today. First is the sharp focus on our targeted industries, our security messaging and capabilities, and leveraging our best-in-class services and technology. And two, the process improvements and upgrading of our talent in the sales function across the enterprise. Now let's go into greater detail, in particular on the first pillar that I described, this deliberate focus in three areas. First, our focused industries within the markets we serve. After extensive analysis and market study, we identified specific industries that show above average growth potential and represent the greatest potential to Unisys. We've invested and built out deep domain expertise and to drive our credibility and believability in front of our clients. We've created roadmaps and blueprints to help clients succeed in adopting new technologies and capabilities within this space. We've launched and refreshed our application solutions and products in these industries to drive differentiation. The second pillar I'd like to spend time discussing is really close to our heart and we're very proud of, and that's around the security. And security in everything we do is our current tagline, but I can assure you it's more than a tagline. Unisys has adopted security as the foundational element to everything we do and how we approach our clients. Stealth in particular demonstrates a commitment to security and has been instrumental in a number of our recent successes as highlighted by these two important wins that I have listed on this page. TSA, Transportation Security Administration, I think everyone recognizes that name. And we were recently awarded a contract in the fourth quarter of 2017 that is going to provide highly visible mission-critical support. I'll spend more time on this in the case study, but I wanted to highlight it here because it is a significant example of how stealth is helping drive sales. But also, we were awarded a significant contract in the first quarter of 2018 in Australia. The Department of Home Affairs awarded Unisys in the first quarter, as I said, a significant new contract to develop and implement new biometric technology using Unisys's stealth identity to support their immigration programs. With this contract, the customer will be using advanced facial recognition technology with other biometric data to further advance traveler processing within the country. Further, by applying many years of experience that we, Unisys, had by supporting similar programs in the U.S., in particular with Customs, Border Patrol, and Immigration, we were able to offer the customer in Australia an accelerated deployment schedule that ended up being half the time of our competition. Another element to our security success is part of our new creation of an organization called the Global Security Solutions Team. The Global Security Solutions Team is a global organization of security specialists and consultants who are providing a broad set of deep consultative and professional services across the security spectrum. This team works closely with our other sales teams to help integrate security managed services in our solution designs. And they've been instrumental in helping us advance our infrastructure managed security or managed services deals to drive greater distinctiveness in our leveraged solutions and further showcase our security prowess. Best-in-class leverage solutions. Supporting mission-critical client functions is essential to to our continued success. Areas such as infrastructure transformation, hybrid cloud adoption, digital workspace, and the integration of our security services are all contributing to our recent success. Finally, our ClearPath Forward technology continues to offer our clients superior operational performance for mission-critical applications within our highly secure environment. Next slide. This slide shows the Unisys solutions. It depicts the extent and breadth of our Unisys product and service portfolio. Starting with the outside concentric circle and working your way in, we start first with the markets and specific industries we serve, and the various solutions and industry-specific products that we offer to those clients. And as you move further to the center of the slide, you can now see how we integrate our leverage services. The combination of our integrated industry solutions products with our leverage services, we believe, are differentiating and distinctive in the marketplace. This portfolio demonstrates, we believe, the commitment we are making to serve and support our clients' needs worldwide. Next slide. So the second pillar or element of our success that I'll talk to is the process improvements and the upgrading and upskilling of our talent. And there are five key areas that I would like to review with you that I think demonstrate these improvements. The first is upgrading our sales pursuit teams. We've upscaled our sales teams and critical sales support functions. We've rolled out new training to drive this upskill and improving the talent we have. Another thing that we've done is we've rebalanced our sales to sales support team. And let me explain what I mean by that. At Unisys, for a salesperson to sell, it truly takes a village to support that person. One person doesn't get it done. It requires solution architects, delivery experts, vertical domain expertise from our subject matter experts within our industry teams. It requires lawyers from our legal team to help negotiate contracts and skilled pricing specialists from our finance department, just to name a few. One of the challenges we had a couple of years ago is the balance of our sales support to sales team was not ideal. In many cases, we were not able to support efforts in the field, and that showed up in inconsistent and poor quality proposals. We spent a significant amount of time in the last couple of years addressing this problem, and now we have balanced the sales to sales support team, and we've seen the quality of our proposals and the consistency in deliverables in recent years. And I think that's had a lot to do with some of the sales success we're seeing. Second, consultative selling. We're no longer chasing RFPs. We're adopting industry-leading sales processes to greatly improve our deal qualification process, as well as be more client-centric in our responses, be more proactive, and identify innovation in our proposals, focusing on how we can impact business issues in organizations, not just the technology. We've hired key industry subject matter experts to support our sales teams, and they in turn are helping us develop more compelling value propositions. Third, process improvements and efficiency. Our global pursuit process has become standardized. This allows greater flexibility and sharing of support resources across the globe. The deal qualification program, which I mentioned earlier, is also helping us say no sooner when confronted with poor deals with very low win probability. We've improved and invested in our pricing tools and automation in support of the sales process so that we can turn deliverables around faster, shorten cycle times, and improve the quality of our proposals to our customers and prospects. Replicating success. This is important. We're now in the process of building an extensive artifact library that is made up of different elements of proposals that we've won recently where we've been given high marks for our sections and proposals and other things that we have developed. These artifacts are now made available to other teams worldwide so that they can leverage these in their bids and not recreate the wheel. Negotiating style. We've become more collaborative and customer-centric. We took to heart customer feedback over the last couple of years to help us reassess our negotiating style and now be seen as a partner rather than a vendor. And then finally, our brand perception. Our marketing department has made tremendous strides in refreshing the Unisys brand to represent our current capabilities and distinctiveness that we want to be recognized for. So now let's segue to what I think is a main element to today's presentation, and that's the key case studies that we've selected that I think do a very good job of highlighting the elements and topics I've discussed up to now and how they manifested themselves in actual deals. So first, let's talk about a large state government deal that was awarded to Unisys in the fourth quarter of last year. This opportunity and case study, I think, showcases this focused industry strategy that we have, building out domain expertise and knowledge, and how that's helping us close business. So let me first describe what this state was dealing with. And I may add that we're seeing that many of these issues are not specific to this one state, but are similar issues, just maybe different scope and different size, but very similar probably across all 50 states in the United States. First, the state was under terrific budget constraints, not unusual. Their IT budget was flat at best, and it was going down in some cases. They had a difficult time attracting talent, particularly in some key areas like security. Retention challenges were difficult. State governments and public organizations have a difficult time offering competitive compensation to key roles in the IT field, particularly when competing against the private sector. And this was real with this state. They also were challenged with implementing a strong centralized shared service operating model. Many state organizations are familiar with having their own dedicated IT. In some cases, their own data centers, their own technical and application support. Obviously, that's an old model that can't be supported in today's day and age. Implementing a centralized shared service operating model is essential, but many state agencies and organizations struggle with implementing the model. They don't know how to make it work. They're not used to it because it's more than just technology. A lot of the success of a shared service operating model extends into governance and transparency and how you show your customers how you're supporting them and meeting their needs. They struggled with this. They also dealt with siloed legacy stovepipe systems. And the problem there is stovepipe systems are very difficult to move into the cloud environment. And so as states want to move in cloud, they have to get their applications from these siloed stovepipe architectures. They need to make them cloud ready, and that can be challenging. And without doing that, you can't adopt cloud technology. And then finally, security. Security challenges in the states are extremely heightened. It's amazing how far behind some states are in their security posture and the adoption of recognized security standards. But equally important is many state programs depend on federal matching dollars to run their programs, such as child welfare, Medicaid, Department of Transportation, matching funds for highways and highway infrastructure investments. All of these are dependent on federal matching funds. And the federal government is more and more in challenging the states and saying and holding back funds in areas where they don't feel states have made enough progress. And security is one area that they're doing this in. So this client was particularly interested in the supplier being knowledgeable around FISMA and FedRAMP federal standards regarding security. And that was something we brought to bear. So the Unisys winning solution in this area included industry experts who came from state governments and had specific IT experience, coupled with our digital transformation blueprint that helps states and public organizations adopt and quickly implement a much-needed hybrid cloud platform. Finally, our security expertise was showcased from day one as we were able to highlight our knowledge of FISMA and FedRAMP standards, and we laid out a plan to quickly get the state to adopt and advance their security posture. These were the things that led to this contract being awarded to Unisys. Next, I'd like to highlight an example of our best-in-class leverage solutions, and that's depicted in the lower left corner of the slide. In the first quarter of this year, a large global technology company selected Unisys to perform and take on technical support to their enterprise clients in the data center environment. But first, let me describe some of the challenges that they were facing and how our solution addressed them. First and foremost, this company was using its own internal field tech support to support their enterprise clients in the data center area. Their tech support, however, was poorly utilized. Utilization rates were very low. Productivity in certain cases was low, as much as 50% utilization. And a lot of this was due to the fact that they could not leverage their existing footprint in certain large metropolitan areas. They also lacked automation and new tools in the field services space. This is not necessarily a IT focus for this company in today or in future years. But because of this lack of automation and investment in tools, they were falling behind in supporting their enterprise clients. They had difficulty flexing with their end client needs. So as their end client's business improved and needed more on-site support, they would scramble to hire resources and find it difficult to fill those resources in a timely manner. Alternatively, when certain businesses contracted, they found themselves with poor utilization and more bench time than they needed, and that hurts the P&L. So all of these factors were beginning to potentially put at risk their customer retention. So they brought us in, and following our consultative selling process, we were able to gain some invaluable insights into these existing operations and some of the challenges they were facing. And we were able to engineer a more productive and flexible operating model built around our best-in-class field services operation. I think it's worth noting that this client entrusted Unisys to take over responsibility of this key customer-facing role. And then finally, let me highlight the TSA, Transportation Security Administration Award, in the fourth quarter of 2017. And it's a great example of how we're integrating security into our messaging and our capabilities to clients. We've all experienced the TSA. They're responsible for managing all the passenger and baggage screening processes and equipment across our nation. That includes over 14,000 discrete devices located in over 420 airports nationwide. One of the TSA challenges was to secure. They need to secure this equipment. Much of the equipment is unsecured and is vulnerable to hacking and other problems. They are also concerned with ensuring greater ease of maintenance of the equipment. As this equipment advances and they roll out more sophisticated baggage and passenger screening equipment, it's going to have to be maintained. It also is going to require possibly more frequency of application upgrades, as well as patching of existing applications. So the maintenance requirements on the equipment is growing, and the agency needs help in doing and supporting that. They also want to begin to facilitate data capture from this equipment so they can conduct trend analysis and look for performance improvements on how they operate the equipment. So those were some of the challenges that TSA was faced with. And as I said, last year the TSA awarded a significant and mission-critical contract to Unisys to improve operational support and connect and secure data from all passenger and baggage screening equipment, which represents 14,000 devices in all the airports across the U.S. By architecting our solution around our stealth intellectual property, we were able to offer an exceptionally secure and cost-effective solution. And in addition, we'll be able to help them capture key data in the future in identifying the trends and patterns so that the screening process can be further advanced and strengthened at our airports. Now let's turn to the last slide. In closing, we believe we are poised for sustained growth. Our focused approach to the industries we serve and our distinctive offerings and leading with our security is resonating. Our process improvements and continued execution at the tactical level in the field is making a difference. And finally, we've created momentum. And because we are winning, our people have greater confidence and assertiveness. And this is being seen by clients and prospects. Clients want to do business with confident people and winners. And we believe this will help grow, keep our sustained growth. I've been with Unisys for 4.5 years. And if you had asked me 4.5 years ago to define the sales culture, I would say it's defensive in mindset. We're back on our heels. We're not aggressive in the marketplace. I questioned whether we believed in what we could do. But today, that's changed. If you ask me today, what's the mindset? I would say it's offensive in nature. We're a lot more confident and comfortable, and we're seeing growth, and we believe we can sustain it. And I'm happy to announce that earlier today, we received notification from another large state that we have been they had signed a contract with Unisys, and that this is another continued validation of the focused industry strategy is working. We have a number of other contracts in play that we expect announcements coming up sometime here in the next the second half of this year. But without going in details, I have to say that it was a wonderful thing to wake up to, come into work today and see that the customer had executed the contract, and we have another feather in our cap in that area. So with that, that concludes my prepared remarks. I'd like to open it up to any questions and turn it over back over to you, Frank, and Courtney.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Appreciate the color. Maybe I'll just kick it off with a couple questions here, and then we'll go to the operator. One, as you think about the sales team and you describe the change in mindset, but how do you measure the success of the sales team? Over what period does it make sense to do that measurement? What are the metrics that you look at? And as you think about driving productivity gains at the sales level, what are you seeing there?
Sure. So the measuring of our global sales team's success, there are a number of metrics that we measure them by. The primary metric is TCV, total contract value, and each gets a quota in TCV terms. They have an annual quota. So we don't have quarterly, or in some cases, some companies, particularly if it's a product-based company, I've even seen monthly quotas. We don't have that. We have an annual quota. And as I said, it's TCV driven. The sales leaders, who the sales executives report to, they have multiple metrics. So they have TCV, they have an ACV quota, the annual contract value, and they also have pipeline targets. Now, the individual sales executives, they also have pipeline targets. So you're given your quota, and we have pipeline targets that we track closely to make sure that the sales executive and the sales teams are building the pipeline that they're going to need to be in a position to be able to retire and achieve their quota. Other metrics that we also look at is the number of bids that we're submitting, to include both unsolicited bids. So we're proactively submitting bids to a customer And we do this a lot on our existing base business contracts. Again, it's an annual targeting and metric performance period, and that works for us given the length of our sales cycle. The way we measure performance is pretty straightforward. You know, selling, obviously, and achieving your quota. As the year progresses, we have specific targets by quarter as far as where you should be selling and be on a trajectory to achieve your quota. And I get reports so that the as we enter the second half of the year, I'll be able to identify those elements of our sales team who are well behind quota and with 6 months left in the year, what they're going to have to do to get back on target and quickly turn things around. So those are the kinds of metrics that we're tracking.
Okay, great. That's helpful. And can you talk about what's driving demand in the different global regions as Unisys continues to expand outside the U.S., in Latin America or Asia? And what's your kind of goal for geographic expansion, and how do you think about that when allocating team resources?
Sure. So we have our four primary regions, U.S., Canada, Asia, Pacific, Latin America, and EMEA. I would tell you, you know, U.S., Canada this year, as well as toward, you know, I'd say the second half of last year, is leading the regions in sales activity. You know, we have the most sales activity in the bid cycle. We have the largest pipeline. And candidly, we're seeing, at least recently, the most sales success in that region. It's also the most competitive. So, you know, the good comes with the bad, but we have a lot of activity, and particularly in the public space. So, you know, I mentioned and highlighted in the case study the one large state win from the fourth quarter, the fact that we've just won another one, and we actually have a number of other deals brewing at different stages of the sales cycle. So the U.S. public market has been particularly strong. We also see strength in other segments of our commercial markets, in financial services, as well as in, we've got some great activity going on in the manufacturing and retail space. EMEA is a big market, and but in our EMEA is our second largest sales team is in the EMEA market. Our historical strength has been in the UK. We've made the conscious decision to begin investing more resources in continental Europe. We see a lot. We'd like to better balance our business in Europe and begin generating more sales activity and more business in the continental Europe marketplace. And our European Central Bank win from last year, I think, is a good example of that. EMEA still has, you know, it's still dealing with some internal issues, reducing costs, getting more efficient and productive. And so that those challenges can be distracting, particularly to the sales function, but we're dealing and working our way through it. But I'm bullish that we will start to see greater participation in our sales results from EMEA. Asia is showing good strength. We historically have had more activity down in Australia and New Zealand, and we've consciously been working to expand and get more balance from Southeast Asia as well as obviously China. And we have a lot of activity going on in the early stages. I'm starting to see greater elements of the pipeline showing up in, as I said, Southeast Asia. In fact, I'm heading out there this weekend for a week to spend some time with some prospects in Singapore and Malaysia. And I think that's an indicator of things that are going on in AP. We continue to see very strong areas in our traditional markets, particularly in Australia, in the public sector in Australia. I highlighted the Department of Home Affairs deal, and we have some other large opportunities going on within Australia Department of Defense and their Inland Revenue. Latin America is our smallest market, and one of the things we're consciously trying to focus on and balance our activity in Latin America is get more activity going outside of Brazil. We're heavily indexed in Brazil, if you will, and that's just, I think, a testament of just, history and legacy. But in the last year and a half, we have put a lot of focus, particularly in Mexico. That's the second largest economy. It's actually in better shape or has been in better shape than Brazil. And we're beginning to see, as I said, the early indications of our efforts are starting to pay off. So I'm bullish about us expanding beyond Brazil and Latin America, and I think Mexico is the logical choice, and the early indicators are positive. And so we've taken our sales organization typically, and wherever we see the greatest growth in the beginning or beginning of a year, that's where we're going to put our resources. But at the same time, we want to make sure we don't shortchange those maybe smaller markets like Asia Pacific and Latin America, but that could offer some great growth in the future. And we have the flexibility to move sales resources and budgets around if we initially see one region lagging behind and we have discretionary dollars that we could move to fill other positions in another region that has more promise, we do that. So we're pretty flexible and adaptive in that manner.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Maybe I'll stop there and hand it back to Courtney and see if there are any questions on the line or through the webcast.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. We do have what I'll describe as a two-part question from Doug Thomas from Gabelli. So, Jeff, I'll just read that to you because you, I know, don't have it in front of you. So the first part is, will you discuss the critical factors in recruiting and retaining talent in what appears to be an extremely competitive environment? And I'll paraphrase the rest of that, which I think is getting at both how we compete versus typical folks you would think of as competitors and also versus players like Salesforce or Workday. And then the second part of the question is, can you talk about how the Salesforce is incentivized to achieve the recent successes you've outlined today, as well as your future growth goals? And thanks, Doug, for the question.
Okay, so there's a couple elements to that. The first one was the recruitment and retention. What we're finding in the commercial market, the non-federal, particularly in the U.S. and Canada, we're actually, believe it or not, and I can say this because I interviewed two people recently in the last 30 days who they actually proactively reached out to us asking if we had openings in our sales team. And when I met with them, I was interested in that, and they said, you're winning in the marketplace, and people are noticing it. And so when you're winning, you can attract good talent. And that's just two examples of how that winning is working its way into the market. But there's a lot of M&A activity in the commercial or private sector, particularly across the globe, but particularly in the U.S. And that is creating, I think, a lot of distraction and chaos in organizations. And I can tell you, if you're a top salesperson and you don't feel like you're getting the support to help close deals because there's just a lot of distraction going on in a company, if they're acquiring or divesting of a unit, you're probably going to look somewhere else. And so we've been the recipient of that because, quite candidly, we offer an attractive option. We're stable. And I've heard that before from candidates that, Unisys, you're growing, you're doing things differently, you're a different company than where you were a couple of years ago, and you also offer a stable environment, and stability to a salesperson translates into greater opportunity to sell and make money. And so that's a positive. So the other thing that comes out that I think is a major selling point to attract new talent and also retain our good talent is, candidly, I think we have a reputation that we built an environment for salespeople to be successful. So one of the things I do when I'm interviewing and I'm trying to attract someone to join us, I spend a fair amount of time describing our compensation plans and how I think they're superior to compensation plans in the marketplace. And it's simple things. You know, it's not like we have some exotic comp plan that's just, you know, incredibly different from the competition. But little things like it's completely transparent. You can go on, you know, as an employee, you can go on site and we lay out exactly how we pay salespeople when you sell. It's amazing how many organizations hold their compensation, their sales commission plan, like it's some secret. You know, and it you know, we never let it out. We don't put it, it's just, it's crazy. So we're very transparent in our compensation plans, and that's attractive to salespeople. We can highlight the investment we make in our training. You know, I talked earlier in my opening comments and remarks about our sales qualification process, which is a process we've adopted. It's an industry-recognized process available in the marketplace. When we hire and bring on a new salesperson, we put them through that training. And it's not half-day, one-day training, and it's not, you know, training you do just by yourself. It's a week-long training program. You do it with other salespeople. It's exhaustive, and it's detailed. But when people go through that, I think they recognize, wow, this company invests in salespeople. They just don't hire guns in the marketplace, give them a quota and throw them out, you know, and you either sink or swim. We also can highlight the tools that we support them with and the sales support engine. You know, I talked about that balance earlier in my comments. That sales support engine is real, and I can articulate that. And so when a sales candidate hears and sees these things, I think they recognize that they have a real great opportunity here, and we offer some things that I don't think our competition does. So those are kind of the things that we do to recruit and retain that I am particularly proud of and I think are making a difference. You know, our compensation, our incentives, I think that was another part of the question. I think that I can segue nicely to that. You know, our salary and commission mix is between a 60-40, 70-30, not unusual in the marketplace. But you know, we do highlight the fact that the variable compensation that we offer is, I think, unique in that it is built around a commission pool based on selling their deal. So when we close a deal, we, within 2 weeks, we run what's called a commission pool. We have an algorithm, and that commission pool is derived based on the gross margin dollars that are projected to be generated by the deal. So I think that's unique in that we emphasize profit in our selling. So even though you have a TCV quota, and that's how we measure you, your commission is paid based on the gross profit dollars generated by that deal. And it creates a pool, and then the 5-6 key people that work the deal share that pool. The sales executive earns the largest percentage, and they earn and they get 75% of that payout, usually within a month after contract signing. And then the last 25% is held back for a one-year anniversary check to just make sure that we're on our metrics. But the 75% payout, I think, is unusual. In the marketplace, other companies, if they use a pool concept like I've described, they typically don't pay out more than 50% up front in the first year, and they typically hold back half. We decided to, about a year and a half ago, to sweeten the pot and get people more incented to close deals. And then we have incremental financial incentives. We have SPIFs, Sales Performance Incentive Funds. We have one today on our security and specifically stealth. So if you sell a stealth deal, you earn significantly more money than you would if that same deal was, you know, a application development deal or a end user deal. Now, these deals tend to be much smaller in size, but we've incented our sales executives and our client executives with this program because we really want folks out there, obviously, driving opportunities in stealth. And we, in any given year, we drive other spiffs in order to drive product sales, particularly around our industry products. So Elevate and Digistics are examples of where we've had spiff programs to get the focus there. And then I think, Courtney, the last element of the question had to do with competition. Is that right?
I think that was sort of tied into what you've probably already covered in terms of the recruitment piece of it.
Okay.
So, Frank, why don't we go back to you for one more, and then we can come back and take one last one from the queue, maybe.
Okay, great. Maybe I'll use that competition segue. If you could wave a magic wand and get rid of one competitor in each region, who would it be and why? And then are you seeing any areas of pricing pressure now? And where do you think areas of pricing pressure may arise in the future? And how are you staying protected?
That's a good question. So the magic wand, wow. You know, the one thing I've noticed in our industry over the last 5 years in particular is oftentimes the client, the competitor that you're most worried about often changes sometimes year to year, believe it or not. And I'm not to be candid with the audience, I'm not sure I know why that is. But just my own experience here at Unisys, you know, I've seen, you know, 2 years ago we saw Wipro, in particular in the infrastructure and managed services space, being really, they were just showing up being very competitive in both the U.S. and European markets. And yet the next year, I didn't see much of them. Then that was 16. And in 17, it was Atos for some reason. But now this year, it's been more NTT Data and DXC. I guess I'd say this. I don't, the Indian pure plays, I probably group them in specific HCL and Cognizant are probably, if I, you know, to answer your question directly, Frank, if I could shoot them, I'd shoot them. If I could use that term. They are aggressive, they are competent and very capable. And Cognizant, particularly in the application space, they're very strong in healthcare. And that, and healthcare life sciences is a focused industry of ours. And HCL is very capable, and they're a formidable competitor in the infrastructure space. So I guess I would answer it that way. As far as, you know, some regional players, you know, there's a company called Stefanini, private company in Brazil, who we see quite a bit in pure end-user support deals, so the digital workspace environment. And they're a global company. So even though they're, you know, they're born and grew up in Brazil, we now see them play across the globe. And they've been formidable, particularly from a pricing perspective. Although what's interesting, I saw them in a number of deals in 2017, and although, you know, we still have half a year left this year, I can't name a single large deal that I've seen them in. Now, part of that may be our industry focus. Because we're focusing in the public sector, particularly in the U.S. and Canada, I think that you know, that by its nature probably causes some of these international companies to fall out. In Europe, Atos is a and Accenture are very formidable players. So that's kind of my response there. On the federal government side, obviously it's the typical federal companies that you see that don't play, we don't necessarily see in the commercial side, but the khakis, the Leidos, and the DXC spinoff, whatever that will be named, will, I'm sure, be a player that we'll have to deal with in the future. As far as pricing pressures, let's segue into the pricing discussion. Fixed price, fixed unit price is where we're what we're seeing across our markets. I'll address federal separate because the U.S. federal is a little different. But in particularly in the infrastructure space, clients want to buy a utility operating model, and we call it P times Q, and it's a simple but elegant model. It's a price per quantity. And so in the end user space, I'll kind of highlight that as an example. Clients want to buy a utility. They want to buy a single, they want to be charged for a single price for a FTE's laptop. And they want you, the vendor, you, the supplier, to figure out all the one-time costs, all the ongoing costs, you know, put it in a model, crunch it, and give me a one charge per month. And they don't want separate charges for move ads changes or for other things that get done. They want you to bake in the tech refresh. So it's very much a infrastructure as a service utility model, and it requires very strong, competent pricing to be able to do that with confidence, to know that you've identified all your costs and that you can also flex with that client as they grow and they need more units to support their business or less. So that's a challenge. And it's something the entire marketplace is moving to. Benchmarking clauses are now more and more prevalent, where a client will require and they can trigger a benchmark as early as year two in a contract. And basically that then results in typically a third party is brought in, and both parties agree on who that is, but a third party is brought in to assess the current pricing that a customer is receiving from their supplier. And if you're within a range, it's usually pretty tight, you're fine. But if they can show market data that you're charging more than the market is, then you can expect a renegotiation. And so that's another example of some of the pressure that's being put on suppliers in our space around pricing. In the federal side, it's a little bit different. The federal government hasn't adopted this P times Q utility model as aggressively as the commercial or private sector, but they're moving in that direction, and we're already seeing examples of it. But there is more time and material and cost-plus deals in the federal government, and I think that's just a reflection of kind of the business that they have. And Frank, there was a third element. I'm sorry, can you remind me, or did I hit everything you wanted?
Yeah, no, I think that was great. I might follow up with, are you seeing any shifts in the mix of contract work from fixed to time and materials, and any changes in the length of contract, any just kind of contract dynamics you could talk about?
Sure. Certainly the length of contracts are contracting. So whereas, you know, 5 years ago, average length of a managed services outsourcing contract was 5 years, five-year base, and typically you get a couple of option years. That's now, you know, 3.5 years. And in some cases, we've seen 3 years base. And I think that's a reflection of this utility operating model. I also think it's, I use the term the consumerization of the enterprise space. I think more and more enterprises want to be able to buy IT like we all buy it as consumers. You can turn it on, turn it off, and it's easy. And it's not difficult. And I don't know if the enterprise will ever get there. I don't think we'll ever get quite to that point because of the amount of customization that's a part of the enterprise space, but that's certainly where they're going to. And so we as suppliers have got to be in a position to do that. And I'm seeing this as more and more a competitive edge. If you as a supplier can articulate this new operating model, you're viewed more as more attractive to enterprises. And so, yeah, they're moving to want to turn it on, turn it off. And that's something that we got to be in a position to deal with. So that contraction, we're seeing customers, termination for convenience, which 3-4 years ago as a supplier, I would never agree to. Wouldn't accept that. Today, it's common in contracts, a termination for convenience clause. Typically, it's no more than 6 to 8 months after a contract startup. It's no sooner than that. And sometimes you can negotiate, particularly if you are rolling out significant technology transformation and you, the supplier, are kind of going at risk because it's an as-a-service model. So I'm acquiring new capability, new tools and automation, and it may take me a couple of years to recoup that cost in my profit. So you can negotiate things to protect you there, but termination for convenience is just another, I think, example of this consumerization and this concept of it's a utility. I should be able to turn it on and turn it off pretty quickly. And I think those suppliers that adopt that that mentality and put in place the tools and skills and automation to do that are the ones that will do well in the future.
Okay, great. Courtney, are there any other questions out there?
We've gotten a couple, but I think, frankly, they're a little bit more on the technology side of things. So I might, if anybody had submitted other questions, I might point those folks to the technology webinar that we did, which is still available on the website. And to the extent there are still any follow-up questions after that, feel free to reach out to me directly, and we can make sure we get you what you need on that. But otherwise, I think given that we're approaching the top of the hour here, Frank, that's probably as good a place as any to draw the line for the questions, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you so much for your time, Jeff. We really appreciate the call here and the color that you gave. It was wonderful to hear from you, and we look forward to hearing more from you in the future.
Great. Thank you, Frank, and thank you all to the audience. Have a good day.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.